Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Can I just get thumbs up from somebody just to say you can hear me and see me okay?
Yeah, Canary and see it.
Brilliant. Okay. I have everybody muted just at the start, just but by all means unmute yourself if you have any question. It's not intended just to be through the chat session. So it's just to keep everybody keep it initially quiet in case there's any distractions from people. So look, this session is just about to try and give a little bit of clarity. It's mostly meant to answer questions for people rather than talk for too long, but I'll give a bit of an introduction on both the exam question one and the rest of the exam, and then undoubtedly people will have questions that they want to ask and so on. There is a hands up thing. I see Brendan, you have the hand up already on it, so I'll take some of those questions in a little bit as well, so you can raise your hand in the participants window. In the participants window if you want to specifically speak, and I can invite you to speak on the mic, or if you want you can just stream questions to me just on the chat. Just bear in mind, I am recording this session here. So, what also happens is the questions will get recorded. So, if somebody sends something to me, that question will probably come up in the video. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think that is the case. So, just be aware of that. Don't send anything particularly private in any communication. Okay, so look, this is, so let's talk a little bit about the exam question one initially. So that's been given out there last week. And the intention now is that, so the overall breakdown for this module normally is 25% for the assignment that you've done previously, and then 75% for the exam. I wanted to break up the exam a little bit, to take some of the pressures of it being online away. And to give people the opportunity to work on some of the paper before the actual examination. So that's what question one is about. It is about trying to get some sort of assessment of the rest of the module learning outcomes. So, for example, the module learning outcomes will talk about people having an understanding of cloud, real world problems, the sort of sections at the end of the course. So while you've done assignments largely on section two up to section seven of the course, and that pretty much covers, and we can say, right, now know how to build web applications, and you have that skill set. We need to be able to sort of test the rest of the material. And some of the rest of that material doesn't lend itself to sort of definition type questions or what are the advantages and disadvantages type questions, because now if we're in an online open book exam, then everyone can just copy and paste definitions and so on, and they get full marks on them. So the intention on exam question one is to get people to demonstrate their understanding of other sections of the course and their understanding of web application development in general. So in the description of the assignment, and let me just screen share that the description of that for a second. When we look at the description, we talk a little bit about sort of building on your existing web application. Now, there are a set of people who haven't submitted the initial assignment. If any of those people are now continuing on to the examination piece, well, then you just sort of imagine that you've built an assignment. It's not a particular disadvantage that you haven't per se. Well, it's marginally a disadvantage because you don't have that knowledge, but it's not something that prevents you from submitting this question. So the idea being here is that you have now built an assignment or have at least in theory built an assignment, and then these questions are being asked. So it's not wildly specific to your own assignment, although, so what I mean by that is, I mean, your submission for question one should not just be, oh, here's the next function I would add. So if you were doing online dating, or let's say you were doing e-commerce, maybe it's a little bit easier. Now you might say, oh, well, I'm going to create a an orders page where people can track all their old orders, and I'm going to create a functionality where they can change their address, and I'll add in functionality where they can have multiple credit cards and so on. That's not, there's no real benefit in that from a learning perspective. So you just talking about other things you'd add into your assignment, you can easily fill up 1500 words on that, but not really have achieved anything. So really what this is about, if we look at the sections here, so this is trying to consider other aspects of the course. So the real world problems, improving our applications, testing, deploying onto the cloud, and so on. And in particular, we're talking about here. And so some of these sections are in relation to that. So it's kind of a fantasy scenario where now all of a sudden your company or whatever, you've been given a bunch of money and say four junior developers. And the reason they're junior developers is because you have to provide them with the guidance and there's nobody that you can ask to complete these sections. So the idea being here that you're now taking charge and saying, well, we've built this prototype, and now what we want to do is we want to bring it to a real world production environment. So that's what these questions are about, is how would you go about dealing with that? So if we take, you know, application framework and designs and architecture. So we talk about application frameworks in the section 12, improving your applications. And so Grails is talked about there. Now, I don't want everyone just to submit, I'd use Grails for building my application. Look, that's fine if you do, but there are hundreds of frameworks out there that you might choose to use on the back end. Why you might use a framework instead. Same with the front end framework aspect. So there's a lot of development. Most applications nowadays are being built in front end frameworks, some in jQuery still, others in Angular and React and Ember and so on. So there's lots of other front end libraries and so on that could be used that you maybe didn't use in your application because you just had to get a prototype built. Whereas now you've got, let's call it, let's say 4 man-years. If this was to be built in a year, you've now got 4, in fact, 5 man-years of development time to try and build an application. So your application can be bigger and you can spend a lot more time and effort into it. So it becomes a different scale. And if you're going to do that and make your application scalable, then you probably would use some frameworks and so on. The data integration is talking about how you integrate your own components, but also I guess that leads into the B2B stuff with regards to how other systems might be able to talk to your system. So if you had an e-commerce web application and you made, for example, we're talking about APIs here really, you make an API available that other applications could connect in and use data with permission to your application. So being able to provide API interface and so on. And then deployment and hosting is talking about, well, where are you going to put your web application? Are you going to just, you know, buy a physical server and stick it under your desk and install Apache Tomcat on that and, you know, MySQL or whatever and just have it all running there? Are you going to look at putting it onto the cloud? Are you going to use Beanstalk? Are you going to use AWS, EC2 instances, whatever? Multi-user deployment development issues is really about thinking of things like what happens now. So the last section, real world problems, talks about this. So GitHub using source version control for making sure that your people aren't overriding each other's work and that there's an appropriate pipeline for development and so on there. And then testing is talking about the testing section. So again, these are all the sections really that you didn't really get to cover on your own application at this point in time. So the idea is it shouldn't exceed 1500 words. As an advance warning on this, my intention is that, now I haven't set this up in Loop just yet. So I have to create the examination in Loop. They're creating a new secure environment for us, so we can start hosting our examinations there. And when it's there, I'll have to, you know, work out what's the best way of structuring this. But my plan is to maybe put a 1500 word limit on the text box that you will copy and paste your description into. It might be, though, that I would provide either that option or the option to upload a document. But if you upload a document, I'm going to check it for 1,500 words as well. So don't go above that. It's unfair if I give a limit of 1,500 words to try and give people a kind of a concept of the scale here. It's unfair if I give a limit of 1,500 words and then somebody goes off and writes 5,000 words and, you know, is expecting a higher mark as a result of that. So 1,500 words is the limit, and that can be checked if we do it by a word submission as well. So 1,500 words is probably about 3 or 4, you know, pages, A4 pages, I suppose, if you were to lay it out. So this isn't a massive assignment. It's largely theoretical. There's no code expected here. So if anyone is opening up Eclipse or IntelliJ or anything like that and developing like that, that's not the way this assignment is meant to go. You've built your web application. This is meant to be the theory about how you would go about creating a multi-user application that's going to have a lot more people involved, and how you would go about doing it. You know, I mean, there's arguably other pieces in here. So any other areas you feel important, you know, maybe some of the development methodology, the, you know, whether you're using Scrum or whether you're using anything like that, that's okay. Obviously, don't spend, try and cover most of the sections. I'm not going to expect them all. It's just going to be marked as an overall essay as such. So don't spend all your time on one section and, or, you know, one or two sections. I'd like a wide range of topics to be covered. So don't get too carried away on any particular aspect. So look, this is up to you. It's open book, so you can use those resources. So look, maybe we'll take some questions just on this piece, and then we'll go into the remainder part of the examination afterwards. So I had one question there just with regards to no images, graphics. Look, images and graphics would be okay. I kind of expected that some people may want some to include graphics. So I'll almost certainly on question one provide the ability where you can upload a Word document. So for now, anyway, people should probably work on a Word document just you probably can upload it. I've tested that already, the uploading of a Word document as your answer, in which case if you do have images and other pieces, well then we'll use that. So images and graphics would be okay in that scenario. Okay, anyone else got any questions? You should be able to upload a PDF. So the questionnaire will be able to upload a PDF. You should be able to. When I set it up before, the options you could choose, the MIME types, the multimedia formats, and I'm 99% certain that PDF was one of those. So that should be no problem, and I can mark a PDF just the same as a Word document. Richie, you asked a question, does the same apply to other exam questions? I'll come back to that in a minute if there's not any other questions just about this particular application. Okay, so if your application failed to be deployed, could it be more interesting to talk how you fix errors or talk about future features? In fact, the answer to that is neither of those. So if your application didn't deploy, talking about fixing errors isn't inside the scope of this assignment. So like I said, some people haven't even built an application and yet should have the capability to get, you know, maximum marks in this section depending on what they've submitted. So I'm actually not concerned at this point. Your assignments are done and dusted, and they give you some sort of context for looking onwards, but outside of that, this isn't an enhancement of your existing assignment. This is to talk about effectively the bridge between building an application in, you know, so this application was meant that you've already built was meant to be about say 25 or 30 hours of work. And I know for some of you it may have been less and for some of you it may have been a lot more. But that's a very different scale than having 4 or 5 developers working on something in the long term and scaling up and building. And it has, there's lots more advantages in what you can produce in having 4 or 5 people working together on an application, but it comes with some challenges as well. And then the requirements of a production system are much more than, you know, what you would have built at the moment, just for, you know, scalability and deployment and all those other things that really that you didn't have to focus on so much. And this is to try and get you thinking about these environments. So how you would fix your errors in your application, not interested, it's not relevant in this question. And future features in your application, we're not even interested. So, you know, so that's not even relevant either. So for example, if you're talking about, oh, I would add validation on this and I would do, you know, do these various pieces, you know, that's fine and it's interesting to an extent, but it's not the question here. So the question is not the specifics of your application, but how you would build an application of that sort of size. Okay, so should we have to move to a different architecture of a model view controller approach now? So that question, so if you've already got model view controller, so remember, okay, so the main thing here is you're not building anything new, right? So you're not building anything new. You're not writing a single line of code for this assignment. So anybody who does that has gone down the wrong route. Don't write a single line of code. What you're talking about, if you're talking about using, so building something in servlets and JSPs using model view controller is a good approach. It's arguably, you know, 7 or 8 years old, if not older at this stage in time, if you were to try and do a production system. So some production systems have been built just using servlets and JSPs with model view controller, and that's a good model. But nowadays, in order to build applications like this, like that, you can build applications much, much quicker using application frameworks. Vastly, vastly quicker. So in some respects, if you were to now have a team of 4 or 5 people developing together, to get them all writing servlets and JSPs and a model view controller framework would be an inefficient use of their development capacity. You'd be much better getting them through a framework and getting all the advantages of those frameworks. So we talked about some of the advantages of frameworks in improving your application. So that was in the context of Rails. And so you get advantages like GORM, and you get advantages like, you know, being able to use Groovy and a lot of, code within Groovy that allows you to do things quicker than you could do it in Java and so on, internationalization, all those sort of other aspects. So there is a very strong argument to, and remember, you're not building something. So you're just talking about, you know, choosing a framework and maybe why you've chosen that framework rather than, you know, you're not actually been asked to implement something. So it's great that you did MVC in the first case. And really, nearly all of those frameworks are MVC approaches anyway. So I would suggest that you do consider a framework in your design there. So our next question, so we need to focus more on differences between school project and production project to real world destination. That's exactly it. So there's a difference between a project that you're doing in the university here and you know, deployed on servers that I provided to you, using a database that I provided to you, using relatively older building blocks to build the application. But now if you were going on from here and you were suddenly now in this scenario where you were going to build your application because it was a really good idea, but your implementation was just a prototype. Now what you're doing is you're now preparing a document which is the, I guess, the roadmap to what you would do now if you suddenly had 4 people arrive. So if today was the first day of this new project and you had 4 junior developers in, what you want to give them is you want to give them a document to say, here's how we're going to host it. Here's the environment. Here's what we're going to use for source version control. Here's how we're going to do testing. Here's the frameworks we're going to use and so on there. Rather than just say, here's the code, start building on top of that code, because I didn't teach you enough to have, you know, in this course, you know, we didn't focus on particular frameworks, and there's good reasons for that. But this is not, some of the tools that you've used to date are great for learning, but they're not a production environment approach typically for building your applications. So it's to try and get you thinking and making a project plan effectively for where you would take your assignment to the next level. Let me just see. So is this assignment similar to a normal plan before a project in a company? Yeah, it is. I mean, there are different types of documents and different types of approaches that people would make. So some people would do documents on functional specs and so on there. It's not really the intention here. This is just to try and get an initial proposal document together to say, this is how I'm going to do things. This is what I, this is the way I'm going to lead the team in order to do all these things. And this is the approaches we're going to take for building going forward. Another question, would Graves be a suitable framework to use for microservices architecture? Okay, so one of the things you have to think there is a microservice architecture one that you want to use, or do you want to go monolithic? You can use Grails, probably not Grails as I've presented it. So for example, the Grails that we've covered is on an earlier version, and it ties together the view somewhat into, so for example, what you're sending back in the view is typically HTML, but there is absolutely nothing stopping you building a Grails application that principally returns only JSON data. So its response type can be JSON sent back, and then you build a completely decoupled front end in whatever Angular or React or, you know, whatever approach you want to use to build your front end. So you can use Grails, and we very nearly did on a recent redesign. So we've used Grails where we had, you know, look, HTML and even JavaScript and all sorts of stuff coming back with it in the views. For microservices, you can't do that. So you need to take a different approach where your Grails controllers only would return back JSON data if you were going that microservices route. So yes, it can be used. Questions are coming in a bit faster now. So I had a question, should the report cover how the tasks are going to be split between juniors, or is the approach which I cover in different aspects like testing, development, repo, maintenance, and development be sufficient? Yeah, you don't need to decide how you would split it up between the individuals and so on. I guess the reason I mentioned four developers is really that just to kind of introduce problems like source version control and having multiple people working, and then how knowledge is disseminated between developers and so on there. So I wouldn't get into saying I would get, you know, Jimmy to do this, and I'd get John to do this, and I get Mary to do this. You know, you've only got 1500 words. So in order to cover these topics, you're really only getting to write a couple of paragraphs on each of these topics and the approach that you would take. And if you start getting into individual plans for developers, you know, maybe you're using up a lot of your words there to a needless extent. Having said that, I don't want to overly control this. This is meant to be a very personal document. They should all be very, very unique. You know, so it's just to get you to think about where you would go next with your assignments, principally, if you had to bring them to a production environment, given some of the new topics that you've learned since in the course, in the later sections, and some of the knowledge, and some of the things you would have considered maybe as you were building your own applications. Okay, next question. Would this architecture consist of model view controller architectures within a microservices architecture? So I think that was a follow-on from the Grails question. So most of the time, model view controller would still be used with microservices. So you still have the same idea of there being a request, there being some sort of interaction with the model, and some sort of response being given back. The only main difference there is that you're now sending back JSON data instead. There are some other challenges if you go down the microservices route. So identification is a big challenge. So we're doing all that at the moment with JWT tokens, because you now can no longer keep sessions. You now no longer have the idea of a HTTP session. So how do you track who somebody is in a microservices type architecture? So there's some real challenges with that. You won't need to get in any major detail on something like that. But there are some considerations, and if it's of interest, you can look into that a little bit further. Okay, and I have one more question. If we choose to talk about server-side frameworks, did we need to stay on a Java language framework, or can we go to another type of framework such as PHP, Python, Django, Node.js? Knock yourselves out, sorry, that's a bit of a local phrase. You can decide to use whatever you want. If you decide to use Python and Django, and if you want to use Java and Spring Boot, or Groovy and Grails, or Ruby on Rails, or whatever, it's a fantasy application you're talking about building anyway. So if you're picking a framework, it probably should be relatively modern and relatively robust and tested. But if we did, if I do even, top 10 frameworks, 2020 web application, I do a search for something like that, we'll see then the top 10, Django, Spring, Laravel, Rails, React.js, AngularJS, Express, so on. So there's loads, and 10 really limited. There are literally hundreds of frameworks. So there's no right answer or wrong answer to any of these. It's just that you have to justify it in your documents. Okay, so any other questions? Okay, how would you create a front end for a microservice architecture? This be a monolithic architecture on its own where the back end makes REST calls to microservices. You're getting into thorny issues that we've had many arguments over, Shane. Most people who build a microservice architecture, most of the time they're fronting it with a monolithic client-side user interface. So for example, you could build an Angular application that is making calls to lots of different microservices. So you could have a Angular application that's doing all sorts of Ajax, effectively backend Ajax requests off to the user manager, to the log manager, to the orders manager, whatever the application might be. So you could have lots of different backend microservices, and the UI is making calls to all those different microservices, but effectively is one monolithic front end application. So you can do that, and then the backend is making REST calls to multiple microservices. If you really want to melt your head, you can look at something called micro front ends, which is where you can start building your web application, your front end web application, as lots of mini front end web applications. So for example, in Angular, you can use web elements for that. Normally at a simple level, you could do something like that in iframes, where different parts of the web application are loading up in different iframes, and actually they're loading up from different locations and so on. There can be issues with doing stuff like that, and you're really getting in depth and very, very bleeding edge there. So in our own architecture, we effectively ended up with a monolithic architecture, except for what we did, where we wanted to reuse components across two or three different applications that we built. We built separate Angular libraries, and then we passed those libraries to the different mostly monolithic UIs at that point in time. So yeah, there is something called micro front ends, but let's not get carried away here just for the purpose of this application. But by all means, if that's something that you want to propose, then, you know, like I said, there's no wrong answers here either. And in fact, one of the benefits of this assignment is you don't actually have to build it. So, you know, it's a good bit easier to talk about a fantasy architecture when you don't have to actually earn the kinks out of doing something, particularly when it's very new and sort of cutting edge. Okay, so any other questions? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the remaining component then after this. I'd be working on the exam this morning to try and come up with an examination that is fair. But obviously we need a slightly different type of examination. So, for example, there's no point in me writing a question saying, you know, what is Ajax or what are the main technologies used in Ajax? Because, you know, it's an open book exam. You'll just go on to Google, as I would, and I just copy and paste the definition. I paste it into the solutions, my submission, and hey, everyone gets full marks for being able to use Google. So there's no real purpose in something like that. So it needs to be an exam that involves some sort of a design or understanding and a demonstration of that. So at the same time, there are limitations in maybe what we can do and make assumptions about your own computers and your environment and so on there as well. So for example, in the exam, we could say, well, everyone's sitting at a computer that has Eclipse installed and it's integrated in with Tomcat and a web browser and so on. So everybody can develop a web application in the same environment and they can submit their web application for correction as part of the exam. We can't really make that assumption about devices now that people are set up in the exact same way. I mean, most people should have that, but you know, there could be challenges there. So we have to try and only use very simple tools at your end and fairly straightforward submissions into text boxes and so on there as well. So the format of the examination is it is a two-hour exam. Question one, now it's a two-hour exam, but the plan I think is that you would have 2.5 hours to submit it. So there'll be a 2.5 hour window from when it starts. I think it's at 9:30 in the morning. So at 12 o'clock, the submission closes entirely. And my understanding in Loop is that at 12 o'clock, it will submit whatever you have done at that point in time and shut down effectively. So you won't be able to do a thing more. So it's a 2 hour exam that you have effectively 2.5 hours. So there's a bit of grace period given for technical issues and so on. I will run a Zoom environment like this in parallel where I'll answer questions in chat. So you can send chats privately and as most of you have there. I will answer questions there, or if I need to announce something to the class. So if there's a lot of people asking the same question, then I will announce something. So what we'll get people to do is to be connected onto Zoom and to be muted, and I'll just have everybody muted and probably turn off the ability for you to be unmuted, because we don't want people interrupting other people in the examination. So I'll likely be the only person that can talk on that, but we'll be able to take questions during the exam, so you've got the equivalent of me being at the exam hall. So with regards to the exam, so there's 2 hours now. That includes, I mean, that you have question one that you'll be just uploading as part of that. So effectively the exam is still worth 75%, except for 1/3 of that 75%, or 34% of the 100% is is you're just going to be pasting in what you've pre-prepared, which is the question one that we've just talked about there. So the very first thing you're going to have question one, and you're going to upload your document that you have completed. So have that ready on whatever computer you're going to connect in on, ready to submit. And so that's question one. The other questions are questions not unlike questions you would have come across before. Now, you should consider the fact that there is no way I'm going to ask questions such as asking you to define a definition or things like that, because that has no purpose anymore when you can just copy and paste it from the notes. So that'll change maybe the fact that maybe a lot of the stuff you would have memorized before, you don't need to do that anymore. There's no purpose in that. So understanding is something that's going to be more important. The remaining questions, so if we consider the exam as, it's marked, there's 100 marks in the exam, although it's worth 75% of your overall grade. In that there are going to be, there's going to be 34 marks for the question one that you submit. There's about 5 or 6 questions worth about 8 to 10%. Some of them are, in fact, I think there's one that's 15%, but they're in and around an average of about 10%. And then there is a 20 mark multiple choice question at the end that has 10 parts in it. Now they may end up being separate questions in loop or whatever, but there will be 20% worth of multiple choice questions at the end. And I'm working with 4 options there. So even if you're only randomly clicking options, you should probably get 5% of that straight up anyway. But there's 20% for multiple choice questions as well. And the questions that are covered, there's a question there, the 50 marks question. So yeah, I think it's just short of 50 marks because I'm just looking at it. If there's 20 marks for the multiple choice, there's 34% for the question one. So we've got 46%, on the remaining questions. And I'll talk about those questions in a moment. Is the multiple choice questions negatively marked? I was tempted because, you know, people straight away get 25% for not knowing anything on average in multiple choice questions. However, given the context of the the challenges around the examination, I'm not going to do negative marking on the multiple choice. This is all new to people, so I'm going to give people the benefit of the doubt on this. And if people do slightly better than they should do, well then, look, that's fine. Everybody's under a lot of stress and pressure. So no, it won't be negatively marked. I haven't decided whether there's going to be 4 or 5 answers, but I have 4 in at the moment, so it may stay that way. So that's there'll be 10 questions in that multiple choice worth 2% each. And again, they should sort of challenge you a little bit in your understanding of the topics rather than be something that you can just look up so much there. But again, I think they're fair questions. I'm working through those. I've only got 4 of them done at the moment. The other questions themselves can span the whole of the remaining course material. I'm going to give you some exclusions here though. So I'm not going to ask you to write servlets or JSPs. I'm not going to do it. I think you've done enough of it in your assignment and so on. So I think we've assessed that learning outcome already. Also the environment that people are in, they may not have their, you know, servlet environment set up and so on. So I want to keep it a relatively level playing field and keep the submission relatively simple. So I'm not going to ask you to write a servlet or JSP. I'm not going to ask you to write, to annotate a Java bean in Hibernate. Not because you couldn't do it technically, but because it's ridiculously easy when you can open up a book and to the level that we cover it. So I'm not going to ask you to do that. So don't spend time trying to memorize stuff for, well, not memorize stuff because you don't need to, but you know, you you're just not going to get asked that. Most other things are fair game. So anything that involves something that you could do relatively well inside a notepad, and potentially, you know, it's up to the student if they wanted to compile something in Java. So for example, HTML is fair game, CSS is fair game, JavaScript is fair game. People can test that with just a browser, test any of those in a browser and a notepad, and that's all people need. Writing SQL is fair game. So you can write that in a notepad. If I ask you to write some SQL, you can write out that SQL in notepad and then just submit it into Loop. You can just submit it straight into Loop if you prefer. There's no particular reason it needs to be a notepad. The other is for HTML and CSS. If you were trying to achieve something, then be able to write it in notepad and to be able to test it, maybe something you want to do yourself. Ultimately, all of these answers are going to get pasted into text boxes in Loop. The testing is fair game as well. I don't need to provide you with, you know, attachments there because you can get them all from the course and so on there as well. So they're maybe all more technical pieces that are all fair game. And then obviously I can ask any questions on the multiple choice across any of the environments and so on. I'm not going to ask you to write the code to deploy Ajax. I don't normally do that anyway. So you're not going to be asked that. You're not going to be asked to annotate a Java bean for Hibernate, as I said. Will the environment be persistent? Do we recommend you work offline and paste in? If you got disconnected, lost, is input lost? Oh, I don't particularly want to even think about that, Richie. There's probably good practice in doing that. If you were doing sort of code questions. So normally it normally be done with a Loop quiz. I've only played with these a little bit initially. But my understanding of it is that it saves as you move between questions in Loop. So we should be good if you get disconnected halfway through or whatever. However, what I am going to be doing is I'm going to be giving out at the same time the examination starts, I'm going to give out the Word document version of the examination. So that's to cater for the scenario where somebody's having a problem with Loop or they can't log in or Loop goes down or whatever the case may be. If Loop goes down, I will be expecting that I will get all of your submissions emailed to me by the same deadline. With everything in Word. We're hoping that the environment will be robust and everything, but you know, like everything else, it's probably a good idea to keep your answers pasted and then to paste them into Loop as well. I'm expecting that everybody will submit. I don't want you to send me Word documents I don't want people sending me Word documents with the exam, but it's just going to be there in the case where somebody's having intermittent connection problems or whatever, or problems with Loop, that they can do it that way if needed. Just as long as they can get a connection long enough to upload a Word document. If it's done through Word document, it needs to be submitted on time. Because we won't take submissions. If the submission's not in on time, then the exam hasn't been completed. Now, if somebody did have a technical situation like that, and you know their internet went down entirely for the day, I won't be able to accept that paper. But my understanding is that there will be extremely light requirements for deferrals. So somebody would be able to defer and reset the exam in August without penalty if there's a technical problem like that. So look, it's probably a good idea to keep a local copy there. At the same time, I suppose, you have to obviously have to make sure your local copy is saved correctly and so on there as well. And so sometimes there's arguably a benefit in having it up onto Loop as well. So maybe a combination of both. Type it in your own notepad, and then just paste it into Loop. And as you do it, it should save your questions as you go. Okay, so that's principally it. Anybody got any other questions? Okay, images and questions. I don't think I'll be asking any questions where you have to submit an image. So it's not going to be relevant there. There are some questions where you'll be submitting code. There'll be some questions where you'll be submitting text. But that's just simply pasted into the text boxes. For those questions. So no, I won't ask you to upload images. It's not hassle. Can you indicate what may be required for CSS questions? So when it comes to HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, it's actually been one of the easier types of things. So actually the question that I was going to ask for the examination this time round, I am asking in the exam. So a lot of other questions I had to just throw out. The ones that you were going to get, I had to just throw them out because I couldn't use them. Because they were no longer relevant if you could open up a book and just do them that way. Whereas, for example, if you're asked a question saying, write some HTML and CSS to show a layout like this, or, debug this code or whatever it might be, we can still do that in the exact same way in this scenario, because it's a challenge question. It's not something that you can just Google. So those questions would be pretty much the same as they always have been in the live examinations. There's no real difference there for what we might ask. Because you're able to just test in Notepad and your own browser, you can do that to test. I'll be able to indicatively see your answer, or indeed I can copy and paste your stuff out and determine if it would work. If I can't visualize it, I can try it by pasting it out myself and seeing is the answer right. No change in those questions. Oh, sorry, there's a question there just about SQL syntax. So the syntax that I'm expecting is Oracle, just because that's what we've taught across the course. Look, I will, have some tolerance in MySQL. I mean, most of my own databases are MySQL and so on. I would prefer the submissions to be in line with what's submitted with what's in the course. There's not that many things covered. I prefer that you submit Oracle code, just for the SQL syntax. The reason, yes, we could say, oh, I can accept MySQL and so on, but then, somebody might want Postgres and somebody might want MariaDB and somebody might want something else. So I don't want to be correcting people wrong. So if I just say it's the Oracle version that we want, then that means I mark fairly to everybody. Okay, so anything else? Okay, that's pretty much it. And just to say, actually, I'm surprised, nobody asked me that, but all of the questions, I'm not doing optional questions. It's just the format in Loop doesn't lend itself there. So there will be you will all obviously have to submit question one, each of the other questions and the multiple choice there. But there's no major surprises in the obligatory questions. So look, I think it's relatively fair to have covered the material, particularly given that you now know you don't have to do surfaces and JSPs, at least you won't be asked to write those or some of the Hibernate stuff. And indeed, a lot of the learning off stuff is gone. So there are some, you know, advantages now in this format, and arguably not having a choice is a disadvantage, but I think it's well balanced off by the other advantages that you're getting here. Okay, so look, that's really it. Hopefully this has been useful and gives people a little bit of sanity in their preparation and so on, and in the assignment itself and in what to expect on the exam. You know, look, we can do another session if people have a lot of questions, or indeed I will be sending out other instructions and so on. We may set up about, you know, this video chat about a half an hour before the exam, just so that everybody's not messing around trying to play around with Zoom and so on beforehand. So we have everybody in and connected up on Zoom. And if anybody is having any particular problems, that's no problem with late questions, just keep them coming. If anyone has any particular technical issues that they're expecting, well, then they can raise them with me in advance. So I'll be on it. I'll be checking my email. I'll be checking my the Zoom questions and so on as we go along the way. So we'll set that up probably about half an hour. So if the exam's at 9:30, which I think it is, I just need to send out more details on that. Then we'll set up about 9 o'clock, and we'll get everything set up, and the assessment should appear then at, you know, the exam should appear at 9:30, and then people will have the 2 hours where they should be submitting, but there'll be a grace period up till the 12:30 to get the submission in. So that's the plan. There's a question there, just how do I suggest we study for the exam? I wouldn't say it's much different than before, except for the context is now no longer about learning stuff off as much. So yes, there's been parts in the course where, you know, I've said, oh, don't bother learning this off, I wouldn't ask you something like this. But there are definitely questions that I've asked in the past where somebody has had to answer off the top of their head a definition or a brief two-sentence description of something. So, for example, in the past, I might have asked, oh, you know, there are three types of, you know, cloud infrastructure, you know, like infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, you know, or maybe I would have said there are three types, define them and give a brief explanation of each. That has no purpose anymore. So you don't need to learn off definitions and things like that anymore. That would have no purpose when you can all open up the exam notes. So the emphasis is really on understanding now. So you should still be able to write your CSS and your HTML and your JavaScript and your SQL and your unit tests and so on there, all those kind of things. But then outside of that is really about understanding topics, because you will be able to look them up. So those basic technical aspects you should still be able to do, but then focus in on understanding other aspects. You know, look, a lot of the groundwork has been done, and some of the groundwork has been done through the assignment as well, and indeed through your other, your question one pre-study as well. So, so not radically different, but just don't memorize stuff, or don't try and just try and think of the fact that you can just open up a book or the notes and copy and paste or do whatever. So consider the fact that I'm not going to ask you something where you will get rewarded to something like that. So it has to be on understanding. So, you know, look, the multiple choice questions will have a couple of gotchas in there. They're going to be things that if you better understand the topics, well, then you're less likely to get caught by the gotchas. So there's no, you know, just try and study with the context that you would have the notes open beside you. So what would you need to know? And that's principally understanding. Okay, you're welcome. Okay, well, look, I think that's all the questions that came have come in. So, look, as always, I will be on email in the meantime. So if anyone has any questions, do send them. Again, preferably to the list because it's useful, particularly if it's about exam. Everyone's typically interested in the answer. Look, email me if you have any questions in the interim, and then I'll send out more information after we get the more structure on the examination. So we're still waiting on the server that's going to be there. Our examinations have to be moderated by another academic. So we want to try and make sure that we've done test runs and so on the examinations beforehand, because I know this is new to many of you, but it's also new. So I haven't given examinations on loop before. And the last thing I want to do is screw it up and have problems on the day. We have testing and everything. So once I get more structure on that, I'll pass on any information. But I mean, you largely have the information. It's going to be an online quiz that will be open to you between a certain window, and we'll have a parallel Zoom session. I mean, that's the core of it. If there's any details, I'll send them out in the interim. Okay, well, look, I'll close off the session then in that case. Look, I'll hang around for a few minutes if anyone has any direct questions, but otherwise we will best look in the examination and so on. Thanks, everyone. You're very welcome.